launch equipment.
Dude, this was back in the days of just cell phone camera.
Yep.
And bad ones at that. I mean, yeah. This was 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, I had a Canon T3 DSLR, and that was high tech. So.
Yep. All right, we'll kick her off. Here we go. We are live. Josh, we made it.
We're live.
Nice job. You survived another day so far.
It's Wednesday?
Is it Wednesday?
No.
Is it Tuesday?
Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
All right. Didn't make it to Wednesday yet.
Still got a ways to go. My name is Bucky Beeman. I am a real estate agent here in Rochester, commercial real estate, and one of the co-founders of the China Hall.
I'm Josh Langmaid. I own Media Core here in town, video production and social media marketing.
And we let our guests do introductions of themselves. We are excited. We have the Black Swan logo real estate team here.
The Black Swan real estate team, not the people who made the logo.
Nice.
I'm Nick Stogerberg, and
I'm Elaine Stogerberg.
And Nick and Elaine, are you originally from Rochester?
Born and raised.
Nice.
Yeah.
Born and raised.
Yeah.
Yourself as well?
I am not. I was born outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I lived there through high school, and then I moved to Oklahoma City. That's where Nick and I met. We lived there for, Nick was there for 15 years. I was there for 12. And then, as Nick mentioned, he's from Rochester, graduated from John Marshall in 2000. Yeah. And then we moved back to Rochester in 2016 so that I could work at Mayo.
Oh, exciting.
And so here we are.
Quite the coincidence. I moved to Oklahoma City and married a lady who became a doctor and matched to Mayo and all that good stuff. So,
yeah.
Next thing you knew, you're back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not what I expected, but it's a nice place to be.
How was Oklahoma City?
Sunny and warmer. Mm-hmm. Very different. Very, very different. So not as beautiful as Minnesota, that's for sure. But
I think one thing that's been interesting for both Nick and I is we moved to Oklahoma City when it was a younger city. And so it was probably maybe a million. And there was a lot of government, public-private partnerships, working to build the city and really build the urban center and grow the city. And Rochester's going through a very similar thing. And so we were able to live through that for 10 years in Oklahoma City and really watch it become sort of a more grown-up city. And now we're seeing that same thing with Rochester. So that's been pretty interesting. There's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of differences. But it's neat to essentially be in a different city in the same part of that city's life cycle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so the narrative is really compelling if you ever get down there and go to the memorial. So the Oklahoma City bombing happened, had a pretty huge, impact on downtown after, kind of the pieces were picked up. One of the slogans of that public-private partnership was that you can't be a suburb of nothing. Because Oklahoma City is one of the largest cities in the whole country by area. It has these big, beautiful suburbs that are some of the most desirable places in the country to live, but there just wasn't, it wasn't
a city center.
Yeah, like a lot of cities, it was kind of a dilapidated, industrial sector and stuff. So the government, took over all those old, brick warehouses and factories and stuff and turned them into bars and clubs and art galleries and encouraged developers to come in and put in these million-dollar condos. And so we really watched an entire city be reborn before our eyes the 15 years that we were there. So pretty incredible thing to watch. And then DMC is kind of the same thing. Fortunately there was no negative incident like that kind of spurred the growth here, but the same concept, back before OKC was kind of reborn, they were trying to bring in employers like Boeing and stuff, and Boeing was like, wow, this seems like a really great place to do business, but there's just nothing here to draw top talent and to retain our employees, which is not a nice thing to hear, as a city. And so, right before we left, I know Boeing had started moving there, and those other organizations that, 15 years before said this isn't a place we want to be. They were coming there, and it seems like with DMC, Rochester has really recognized that. If Mayo wants to grow, if we as a community want to grow, we need to to really revitalize our urban core and create a living experience that's going to draw the next generation of talent to this town. So it's a strange coincidence to see it all replay. Mm-hmm. So
did you move a lot when you were in Oklahoma City, or did you get into one place and just stay there?
So I first moved to Norman, Oklahoma, which is where the University of Oklahoma is. That's the south suburb, college town, kind of has its own feel. The bumper stickers are Keep Norman Weird. And then I lived in Edmond, and that's where Nick and I spent most of our time. That's the northern suburb. That's more families, three bed, two bath suburban homes. And that's where we lived. And then I went to medical school in Oklahoma City. So kind of all of the three major areas of Oklahoma City. So.
And did you see a lot of homes, appreciating in value in that area because of the growth?
So that's a fascinating thing. Oklahoma is really a very level-headed place when it comes to real estate. It's hard to really appreciate going from, a place like Minneapolis or Rochester down there. So, the first home I purchased out of school, which is a little unusual, but, it's $200,000. It was a custom built home. It was a four bed, two bath, four garages and parking for 14, 12 foot ceilings, granite everywhere, granite in the mudroom, granite, crown molding,
and it wasn't
12
anything
inch molding.
Special. It was a nice
right.
house, but it wasn't anything.
That's your standard build is what might be considered like an executive home or something here. And that was a 1,800 square foot home. So not like mm-hmm. a big home, just, of course you're going to have granite everywhere and stainless and all these things. So that's 200,000. And that was the term didn't exist then, but that was a house hack. So I lived with some roommates and we rented a house together and that went pretty well. And 2009 hit and, builders were giving houses away and the government was paying you to take them off their hands. So I picked up one of those houses and rented out the rooms to roommates. And on the net, I don't know if I've ever actually paid a mortgage payment on that house. Mm-hmm. When my wife moved in, we still had roommates. There's one gentleman
who renegotiated the lease.
Yeah.
They wanted a lower rent.
I really admired that.
Because I was moving in. Which was fair.
Okay. So
you got penalized, huh?
It cost us to get married.
So to be sure, I remember one day my roommates came up to me and they're like, "So Nick, we noticed that Elaine is living here now." Also, her two German shepherds are living here.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty great, huh? And they're like, it's okay. And so I admire their grit. One fellow, he's a youth minister at an inner city mission in OKC, and I lived with him for 10 years altogether.
Fun fact is we've never lived alone because our roommate lived with us until like 3 weeks before our daughter was born. Mm. But during those 3 weeks, my brother was living with us. So we live with our children alone now, but the two of us have never lived alone. That's kind of a fun, like we own all this property, all these houses. We've never lived in a single one of them alone.
So, yeah, I mean.
Been house hacking ever since.
Yeah.
I love it.
Still got kids as roommates.
The toddlers don't pay, but yeah. They're worth it.
But they're going to.
I love it. Yeah. I love there being things happening and stuff. And having a big empty house yourself in the suburbs just doesn't sound exciting to me. So.
Yeah. So you mentioned, did Oklahoma City appreciate through all of those changes? And it's a very different market to understand for a number of reasons. Kind of some of the simpler ones off the top of my head are that it's big and flat. And so the city just keeps growing and growing and growing. And there's really good interstates. So there's no reason not to live 30 miles out of town because that's really only a 25-minute commute. So it's hard for homes to appreciate when you can just keep building bigger and nicer homes. Fashion moves very quickly there. So we look at Minnesota homes that even with finishes in the 90s, they're still pretty nice houses. If a home is about 5 years old in Oklahoma City, it's old. I remember one time we were walking
through.
It's
like a used car.
Yeah, we were walking through a home that was a 1999 build.
Yeah.
And this was a home that we were thinking about buying for ourselves because it had a pool and some other amenities.
So it was 430.
430,000.
Pool, cabana,
5 bedrooms,
basketball hoop, tennis court. Or it was only a half tennis court. It was like a hybrid basketball hoop tennis court.
And there was a couple there talking with the realtor, and we just sort of were listening in. And this was in 2010, a little later than that, probably 2012 or 13.
Yeah, it was less than 15 years old.
And they were asking very serious questions about how old the home was and was that going to cause a lot of problems.
Right.
And it was like 15-year-old home. It was not very old. But that's the market there. So it's hard for homes to appreciate. Materials are pretty cheap. Labor is very inexpensive.
Very little regulation.
And I think more importantly, like Nick, you know, sort of alluded to some of it, Oklahoma is very steady. They passed a lot of laws in the 1980s after the savings and loan scandal that helped them with the 2008 recession. So home prices never really fell all that much, but then they never really came up. Mm-hmm. And so like that $200,000 home that Nick built in 2009, we still own today, and it's really only appreciated like $25,000. So it's a different market. It cash flows very well. It's very safe. You're probably not going to lose any money on your investment. The homes are new, so they have very low capex, but there's not a lot of appreciation.
Right. Yeah, it's a very, very different market. And it's really interesting to me, the fundamental drivers behind the savings and loan crisis. I don't know how sophisticated you get, you know. Mm. So the regulatory environment for banking and I don't have a huge amount of insight into lending and stuff like that, but dealing with lenders down there, like it's a personal relationship. They have skin in the game. Like if they write a bad loan, that could be the end of their job. Mm-hmm. It's very, very person to person. And there's just a lot of kind of checks and balances, it seems like, mm-hmm. that prevented things from really running off the rails, in 07 to 09 there. And then, it just kind of just kept on trucking. So mm-hmm. it did, statistically speaking, it did better in the downturn than any other large city in the country. So part of that's just oil. Just oil had a good run through there. But yeah.
So before you maybe focused on real estate as additional income, what were some of your other focuses? What did you do?
So I've always been a busy person. I learned to hustle running a produce stand in Rochester. Like you haven't haggled until you've haggled with some Great Depression, grizzled individual over, you know, a nickel for an ear of corn or something like that. Negotiating a $1 million real estate transaction is nothing compared to that. Went to school for engineering and ministry in Oklahoma City, and then ended up working for a software development startup for 9 years. Got in the ground floor of a software development startup there, and we picked the best time since the Great Depression to do that. So 2006 inception, managed to not go out of business in the first 5 years, and then in the second 4 years, ended up ramping up to, we went from 13 million venture capital to about 100 million in private equity valuation. And then it's a kind of a complicated story, but I ended up not reaping the dividend from that for various reasons, and that coincided with our move to Minnesota here. But through that whole time, I was kind of getting ready for when the company would sell, and how do you not become one of those people that wins the lottery and then is bankrupt the next year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And all my research pointed to real estate. It said, if you're gonna go get, you know, $500,000, $1 million, whatever, and you know, that's not like never working again kind of money, but mm-hmm. if you spend it right, you can easily turn that into, you know, several million dollars in real estate, and that might be a situation where you don't have to work again. So, plus trying to offset the tax implications of receiving a large capital gain like that. I've always house hacked and, mm-hmm.
So while Nick was doing that, right before I went to medical school, I was working as a therapist for some families, and one of the families, they had a child with autism, and so I was with their family about 20 to 30 hours a week, and that family invested in real estate. And so just, you know, by being in their home 20, 30 hours a week, I would have a lot of conversations mm-hmm. with them. In fact, almost every morning I would get there at about 7, and the dad and that family would be the only one up, and you know, while he was making his coffee and I was getting ready to wake up the kids, I'd say, what are you doing today? Or what's on your schedule? And he would tell me, we're, you know, doing this real estate deal, or we're doing this for lead gen, or all of these different things. And so I was kind of coming of age in that environment while, and Nick and I hadn't met yet, while he was participating in a startup and thinking, okay, how am I going to be a good steward of these resources when they come? And so then we met and we both started talking about how do we invest in real estate and how do we make this happen? And, you know, to get back to Oklahoma City and why it was such a good market to for us to start in is it's very inexpensive. So we bought our first investment property for $35,000.
Sweet.
Nice. Yeah, you could get like...
Did it have a front door or was there...
It was a fully fledged house. It was a 3-bed, 1-bath home. It was a foreclosure. It had been vacant for a while, but that's not really a big deal there because the weather's not that severe. So you don't have
that
to worry.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you don't have to worry as much about homes. So when I was in medical school and I wasn't working, but Nick was, and we were kind of ramping up, waiting for this the startup to sell, we knew we wanted to have the skills before we had the money. And so we saved up everything we could just coming off of Nick's salary and bought our first investment property and then rehabbed it largely ourselves because we didn't really have a lot of money. So we did hire out a couple of things like the roof and the HVAC, you know, things we couldn't do ourselves. But we were in there painting it ourselves, laying the ceramic tile, putting blinds up. I mean, anything that it needed. And we turned that property over in about 4 or 5 weeks and then just loved it and knew that this was for us. We had converted the home that I lived in before we got married into a rental. So technically that was our first one. But I don't really count that because it was a little easy. We already owned it. We already... you know, knew it. We just had to get a tenant in it when I moved in into the house that we lived in. So I really count that first one as that one that we bought for $35,000. You know, I do wonder if we hadn't lived in such an inexpensive market, would we be in real estate today? Because even coming to Rochester, the first investment property that we bought here was $125,000. Which is materially different than $35,000. And I don't know that we would have had the courage to do that if we hadn't had that experience with that smaller one. Which, you know, to be clear, when that was $35,000, that was everything we owned. Like we were putting
cash advancing credit cards.
Yeah, we were at Home Depot putting the paint on credit cards and just had faith that we'd be able to refinance out with the forced equity that we were creating. But it was certainly nice to learn with a smaller number.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the website if you...
Is yeah, it? We've got yeah. our whole story there.
Yeah.
What is the URL? Let the people know.
Just you just go to blackswan.realestate.
Awesome.
So that's one of those new domains that only licensed agents have access to, the .realestate domain. Everyone puts a .com on the end. There's no .com on there. So
I think I was trying to email you, and I kept messing that up.
Yeah, our emails also get blocked by the spam filters. So we're trying to decide what we want to do with that. It's getting better. But,
good.
You mentioned we might not have had the courage to invest in Rochester. I agree completely. Although, so I think this is a fun anecdote to give you some insight into our personalities. So Elaine and I both grew up very poor. We really had very little growing up, and so we've always had really conservative values. So we didn't want to put our wedding or wedding ring on a credit card or anything like that. And Elaine really wanted a big ring. And
this is a good story.
I totally understood that. And so I'm like, okay, I need, you know, I think it was 4,000 for the ring or something.
I think it was
six thousand for the ring. And I'm like, okay, well, if I sell, I had like a nice motorcycle and a nice, you know, fast car and, you know, young bachelor toys. So I'm like, well, if I sell everything, I could maybe scrape together the cash for that. That sounded very unappealing to me.
Trade on all this for a ring.
And I enjoyed the motorcycle and the car. So I don't know if I would have wanted you to sell those either.
So one day I'm on Craigslist and,
found a ring on Craigslist, huh?
No. It's better than that.
Yeah. The plot thickens. So I've got some friends who are car guys and, we were talking and someone put this oil field service truck on Craigslist for like $2,000, which is this Chevy 3500. It had no bed and it was a torn up oil field vehicle. And, my friend James, sent that to me. And then he also found a bed for that exact vehicle on Craigslist out in some farm field. There was like this weird cell phone picture. And he's like, man, I bet you could just take that oil field truck, put a bed on it, like convert it back to a regular truck and, you know, put lights on it and all that stuff.
And wash it.
And wash it. Yeah. I mean, it was a nasty.
Some really simple value add. Like, just clean it.
He's like, man, I bet you could like double or triple your money. And I'm like, that's it. This is, this is the sign. So I immediately went and bought this thing.
No. The plot thickens.
No. We're there. I immediately went and bought this thing and proceeded to flip it. But I didn't have the money to buy it. I didn't actually have the $2,000. Right. So I went to Elaine, who did have, to her name, nearly $2,000. And I said, could you please give me all the money you have? And I can't tell you why, but you're really going to like it. And and she was like, I trust you. Sure, we can do that. And then she came back later that day, and there's this big, nasty oil field truck sitting in the driveway. I'm like, look what I bought with your money. She was not very impressed.
Well, and then there was like, we couldn't get in touch with the people who owned the bed.
There was
only
an email address.
Like, scramble of like, does the bed even exist? What are we going to do? We were like, well, maybe we could just like clean up the truck and sell it for $3,000. I don't think there's an opportunity to lose here. And I knew at that point that we were flipping the truck. I didn't know why. But I was definitely in on flipping the truck because I went out to the farm to get the bed with you guys and we carried it across the field and.
Right. So we did flip it and made several thousand dollars, and that is what bought her ring.
Nice.
So I return capital to my investors.
And then
took that money and made the best investment of my life.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
I don't know what the ROI is on that ring, but it is off the charts. So
that is
That's us. We are. Courage may not be the right word. Elaine is the sane one. I'm the crazy one. I'm like, oh, we could go buy this thing. We could do something with it. And Elaine's always pulling back on the reins, making sure we're not doing too many crazy things at once. But
So OKC did – is that how you say it? OKC.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got to get used to that. OKC, that sounds cool. Did you eventually acquire several houses there, or was it – two houses or what was kind of the whole real estate thing there?
So I had the home that I lived in before we got married, and that was similar to Nick's. It was a brand new build. It was smaller. It was just a 3-bed, 2-bath, 2-car garage on a smaller lot. That was our first rental. And you know, to go back to, I'm kind of the sane conservative one and Nick sort of, you know, the more, hey, let's try this guy. We got married in 2011. So it was right after, you know, 2008, still in those very early years when, you know, the housing market was suffering, even with the conservative nature of Oklahoma, it was still suffering. And I wanted to sell the house. I knew that I was going to medical school. I knew that I was quitting my job. I knew Nick would be the only one working. I was hoping there would be children coming. And I didn't want to have another house, another mortgage. So Nick did entertain me, and we put it on the market. And, you know, we kept lowering the price. And we were at some situation where we hadn't even had a showing yet. And we still would have had to have brought like $30,000 to close, which was everything we owned at that point. I mean, we would have had to have like liquidated our 401ks and it would have been bad. And so Nick was like, I don't think a tenant can cause $30,000 in damage. Why don't we rent it? And all along he had said, I want to rent it. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. I'm quitting my job. I'm going to medical school. But then when he said, well, I don't think a tenant can cause $30,000 in damage, I was like, well, I guess. Like, there's really no other option at this point.
Right.
So we put that one up for rent, and that was our first one, and we still own that home. We've never sold a home. That's the only sort of skill we don't have is we've never sold an asset. Yeah, isn't that weird?
That's great.
Warren Buffett approach. The best holding period is forever, right?
And then we bought the one for $35,000, and then the home that we lived in through our marriage, had our first child there. When we moved to Rochester, we chose to keep that as a rental, partly because we got it at a good price. You know, it's not going to need really any CapEx because it's new, and partially because we have some thought that we might go back to Oklahoma City when we're done with Rochester, and so we would move back into that home. I think that possibility is getting less and less as time goes on, but it's nice to know that if we did decide to move back, it would be a very seamless move back into that home. So we have those three there, and then everything else that we own is here in Rochester.
And how has the transition been to Rochester? Just as a whole, as a business, as a family, as...
And what year did you come to Rochester?
Come back. June of 2016.
Okay.
Yeah. It has been transformative.
It's been a black swan.
Absolutely.
So black swan theory is the notion that rare, unpredictable events that are massive in scope tend to outweigh the consequence of small, predictable events. So you going to work every day and being a diligent employee is outweighed in consequence by the company suddenly going bankrupt unexpectedly or something of that nature. So, honestly, when we got here, we pulled up in the moving truck and...
I was driving the car with the kid and the dog and the plant. And Nick was driving, or I was driving the regular car. Nick was driving the moving truck with everything else.
Yeah, we just wept. I mean, we lost a lot coming here. We had some really phenomenal relationships. My startup, she obviously had a phenomenal opportunity coming here to Mayo for her training, mm-hmm. but also lost a lot coming here. Our friendships in Oklahoma City were really meaningful to us. And it just felt like it was a real, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. What brought us here? I mean, we didn't plan to come here. I grew up here, but,
you weren't coming back.
That wasn't the plan. I mean, yeah, I love being here, but it wasn't the plan. And then I ended up securing a pretty neat job at Mayo. So I'm helping them bootstrap a software development startup within Mayo. It's the intrapreneurship movement. We've gone from I think 10 devs or something when I was there to, I think I have 70 devs now there or something like that I provide technical leadership for. It's just really amazing to be able to, the big players like Facebook and Google and stuff, they don't innovate. They know they can't. They're too big. So they sponsor startups within their umbrella, within the Alphabet umbrella and stuff. Mm. And Mayo, I don't think realizes just how cool this thing is that they're doing. They should be on the cover of Forbes for what they're doing with this tech startup within their umbrella, because it's a page straight out of the Google playbook. And so that was a phenomenal vocational opportunity that has really made things hurt less with the startup. And we had an investment property under contract within 6 months of moving here, and just kind of ran the same playbook we ran with our $35,000 property in Oklahoma. And when all was said and done, I think we ended up with $100,000 in equity in that property within 3 months of close. Mm-hmm. So just a lot of opportunities like that kind of sprang up and surprised us. So I don't know how we ended up here. Seems like there was a plan.
I think there's some technical details that are important. Presumably, some of your listeners know medicine and know about the match, but likely many of them don't. So at the end of medical school, it's sort of akin to a sorority or a fraternity match. So a medical student who's graduating goes out and interviews wherever they're invited to interview. And then they go home and they make a list of where they want to go. And then the organizations make a list of everyone that they've interviewed. And then it goes into a system that's called the match. And there's an algorithm that's run. And for some reason, it takes 2 months. So you submit your list in February and you find out in March. And it's a big deal. Medical schools have big parties and celebrations. There's usually some sort of unveiling. So for mine, it was a bottle of champagne that was in a tote, and you pulled the champagne out, and the name of the hospital where you matched to was on there. And so when I was interviewing at the end of medical school, we had lived in Oklahoma City, myself for about 10 or 12 years, Nick for about 15. We had our daughter, and we were, in this place of, should we go anywhere in the country and really dedicate everything to my medical training? Or should we just stay put? We really like Oklahoma City. We had a really amazing friends there. I mean, we still have them. We just don't get to see them very often. We knew the market, so we were ready to go with real estate. We had watched Oklahoma City grow as a city, and so that was, we felt like we belonged in that city. And then there was this whole other thing where, wow, I could train at the Mayo Clinic, or I could train at Johns Hopkins, or some of these other places where I had interviewed. And we went back and forth every day. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a new baby at the time, and so we would put her to bed and make spreadsheets, and then we're like, oh, you can't make this decision on a spreadsheet. This is a feeling decision. And eventually I chose to rank the University of Oklahoma in Oklahoma City as my number one option, and to rank the Mayo Clinic as my second option, sort of as a thing to the universe that there's no way they would want me. There's no way I would be good enough to train there. And Oklahoma City is the safe option. Yep. And for reasons that I don't, you know, really know or understand, and I don't know if I ever will, I did not get accepted to do residency at my home program in Oklahoma City, and I did match at Mayo. And so that was very unexpected. And I feel like it was sort of the universe's way of saying, get out there and grow and do big and scary things. But it was hard. You know, I pulled out that champagne bottle. You know, you're in a room with all your friends, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm staying here. I want to know where you're going, and you're going, and, you know, and then I'm like, oh, well, mine.
You didn't even open it.
Even open it for several minutes, because I'm like, where are you going? You know, you're thinking of California or New York, or, you know, I'm just staying here. And then I opened it, and I, you know, sort of looked at Nick like, what is this?
I got the wrong bottle.
Huge denial. Like I went to the dean of my medical school, and I'm like, I don't think I actually matched at the Mayo Clinic.
Like on the spot. Like, what's going on here?
Like, sobbing. You know, we Nick and I don't have a lot of family, but we have very, very close friends. And so over those coming days, you know, we had lunches and dinners with our friends to say, well, we're not living here anymore. Mm-hmm. Like these children that we're having, and we were kind of hoping we would all raise our children together, and we were getting into a real estate partnership with some friends there. Well, that's not going to happen because we're going back to Rochester.
We actually bid on a property 2 days before the match. We missed it by like $1,000.
And we were so mad. We were like, why did we miss that by $1,000? This is so stupid. Why are we bid on all these properties? Time?
Yeah.
And it was all sort of meant to be.
Yeah, and there was a plan.
So we bought our house here in Rochester sight unseen within a week of the match, and packed up our stuff and came here. And it has been absolutely what the universe meant for us. Our marriage is stronger. Our relationships back in Oklahoma are just as strong. We've been able to maintain them while having all these new friends and opportunities here. We've been able to see a whole different real estate environment, one that I think is more indicative of, you know, some of the bigger markets that we might eventually be in, like, you know, the higher cost of living markets. It's just been a really amazing experience. I don't know where we'll stay. I don't know if it'll be here or if we'll go back to Oklahoma City or go to a whole other third option. But it has definitely been like the black swan. Hopefully not of our lives. I hope there's still like fun and exciting and crazy things coming, but certainly like of this decade. I don't need another surprise that big for at least a decade. So that's kind of the technical details about how did
that's
we
good.
End up here.
The, the weird thing about it is you might be a little too young. Fight Club.
Oh, yeah. I remember Fight Club.
Once you've lost everything, you're free to do anything.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I don't want to be melodramatic. Like, we live charmed lives. We have so much to be thankful for. But we sure love having control, which is one reason we love real estate. And the entire experience has taught us that we have control over nothing. every plan you make can be taken from you in a moment. And that's given us a strange calm. I don't even know what the right word is, confidence, like we could do anything. We could go anywhere. We could be anyone. Not because we're anyone special, but because we've done it before and we can do it again, and we probably will. So
I think we have a really deep sense that wherever our family is where we are. And maybe we wouldn't have had that if we hadn't left Oklahoma City. We would have felt more like, well, this is where we have to be, or this home is where we have to live, or these jobs are what we have to have. And now we have a very clear sense of if we're together and our children are there, everything else will be fine.
Neat.
I encourage everyone to do something to challenge their sense of identity. I mean, before this, I was a software engineer. I was a ground floor unicorn startup software engineer, that thing that every CS student wants to be. And I really hung my hat on that. I thought I was something special because of that. And, you know, I've done some research after the fact, and it turns out it's kind of the rule that people don't get paid. when their startup goes big. You know, look at, you know, Apple or Facebook or whatever. You know, those ground floor people, for the most part, did not get what was coming to them. And I thought of myself as an Oklahoman, which mm-hmm. is really interesting. There's a lot of things to be proud of, I think, as an Oklahoman. And when you lose some of those things, you have to figure out who you really are.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I challenge everyone to think really hard about mm-hmm. who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am not a W-2 employee. I'm very proud to work for Mayo. I'm very proud to be a real estate investor, but I'm a husband and a father and a person who's passionate about growth and experiencing everything there is to be experienced in this life in the brief time we have.
That's cool.
Yeah. So our next thought, it's still very early when we have some time to figure it out, but our next thought is, what is the biggest, scariest thing we can do? Do we want to go overseas and practice medicine over there? Do we want to move to Hawaii? Do we want to travel the country and I can practice at different hospitals along the way? That's something called working as a locums physician. So kind of the exact opposite, whereas before we were like, oh, we are Oklahoma lifers. We want to live in one house forever, have our children in the same school system forever. And now it's very different. It's what is the biggest, scariest thing we can do that will give an environment for personal growth to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what that'll be. Maybe it'll be Rochester, Minneapolis, Oklahoma City. We'll come back and do a show when we make up a decision, because we don't know. Every good psychiatrist does their own therapy, and so I have a therapist that I see, and that's pretty much all we talk about is, what am I doing next? I don't know. There's so many good options, and all I know is I want it to be big and awesome, and I don't know what that will be yet.
The barriers have somewhat been eliminated, it seems like. You know, it's like the hurdles are not – I mean, they're there. Certain
it's
hurdles.
Not as scary.
You're right,
yeah,
exactly.
The biggest barrier is fear. And that's right. Gone, you know? Yeah. Like I said, if we have each other and our children and enough money to buy food, we're okay.
Yeah, one of my favorite books is The Alchemist. I don't know if you've ever read
mm-hmm.
it.
No.
So again, I do think we were brought here by a plan. I don't know whose plan, but certainly not ours. For some reason, I decided to pick up The Alchemist. And I listened to it on the drive here from Oklahoma City. I don't know what the odds are that I would listen to that book. And it's a book about a man who is well accomplished in his field. He is a shepherd. That's the name of our son, by the way, is Shepherd. And he loses everything to travel to a faraway place and pursue his personal legend, and is terrified that he immediately loses everything, doesn't know who he is. And I guess I don't want to do a Reading Rainbow moment and say...
Reading Rainbow? I haven't heard that in forever.
Reading Rainbow.
So
that's awesome.
So he figures out that, first of all, you can always go back. If you lose your flock, you can get another. And second of all, the whole arc of the story is that he has to go to a faraway place to discover that his treasure is back home where he left it. And it's a really beautiful story of symmetry and how you should stop at nothing to pursue your dreams. So maybe you have an amazing W-2 job.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a beautiful set of golden handcuffs. Maybe you have, family that really enriches your relationships and stuff. Well, guess what? If you decided to quit your job and do a startup or move to that place you always wanted to live, that job's going to be waiting for you. You can find another, and your family sure as heck isn't going anywhere. Neither are your friends. And, life is too short to... Mm-hmm. To live today as you lived yesterday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think one of the stories to kind of bring us, you know, to the present time of Rochester and our business that we have here is, I think, really speaks to the values that we have in our business, that we're very relationship-based. You know, houses mm-hmm. will come and go, a little bit of money will come and go, but relationships are really what is valuable in life. And so we had moved to Rochester. I had started working. We just had our daughter at that time. We didn't have our son yet. And Nick had started going to a group with a gentleman who is the father of someone that he went to high school with. And so they, now that Nick's an adult, they've developed their own friendship, even though he's a generation older than us. And he was working with a lady who's a generation older than him, who had failing health and needed to move out of her house. And he knew that Nick and I wanted to do real estate. And so he came to us and said, this person would like to sell their house. Unfortunately, it's in very, very bad disrepair. It's kind of a hoarder situation. She certainly couldn't put it on the market. She'd really have to sell it to an investor. And that was someone that Nick had known when he was, you know, 6, 8, 10 years old. This little lady who's old now, who wasn't old 30 years ago, would drive him to church and take him out to lunch and different things, kind of helping him along because he came from a tough background. And so she provided some mentorship. And because of that relationship that was, you know, 30 years old, that had transcended him moving to Oklahoma City for 15 years and then moving back, we were able to get that first property here in Rochester. And I think that was a moment where it really felt okay that, yes, we're in a, you know, we're halfway across the country and we're in a completely different area, but who we are hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And this good relationship that's 30 years old is allowing us to get our first investment property here. And so that's how we started investing here in Rochester. And like Nick said, we were able to get about $100,000 in equity out of that home, and then basically have just kept snowballing it to buy more properties that are distressed, rehab them, get the appreciation, refinance out, and then just keep going.
So it's amazing. You guys are rocking and rolling with your own jobs. Mm-hmm. And as a couple, you're building a real estate portfolio.
Yeah.
And what else? I mean, what is Black Swan Real Estate? You had another kid. Amazing.
We have a one-year-old and a three-year-old and
Elaine's
schedule is kind of insane, working, 13 days straight the last 2 weeks?
It varies, but it's a tough job. It's medicine, so yeah. It's tough.
The neat thing is it really forces you to treat it like a business and not a hobby. Like, you have to hire things out. You have to be really careful about where your time is spent and lever that time as aggressively as possible. You know, there's a lot of real estate investors who swing their own hammer and do everything themselves, and I totally respect that. I got to be honest.
We did it too in the beginning.
I love working on a house. Like, it's very enjoyable to me to go fix up a house. But
we just got one under contract that doesn't need much, and so we're like, we should do it. Like, for old people. Yeah. Like, we can, like, hire a babysitter and, like, go paint together.
Date night.
Why go to a restaurant when we can go paint together and, like, lay some floor together? Mm-hmm. So we're on the fence because we have a vacation in there and we don't want it to just sit vacant for a while, but we're kind of excited that we might do this one ourselves.
Yeah. So, treating it that way has really empowered us to scale. When you're getting really good at building relationships and hiring people, and we have built a series of business processes that really, we spend almost no time managing our properties. We self-manage and we manage our properties in Oklahoma. Really our whole business model is built around finding phenomenal tenants. You know, we start with the end in mind. Like, there's a few properties on the market right now. I'm not going to name them. But phenomenal deals, cash flow great, but I know I'm not going to get a phenomenal tenant in that property because it's a little weird or whatever. And we
looked at one that the only main bath was off of the living room, and there was a half bath in the master bedroom upstairs, and it was priced very inexpensively, like mind-bogglingly. That's a weird word to say, but very inexpensively. But we're like, well, who's going to rent a house where you have to
go down into the living room to take a shower
in the living room or carry your clothes down there? Like, this just isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, so we pass on things like that.
Right. So we tend to find really phenomenal tenants. We try and take homes that need a lot of TLC, sometimes just a little bit, but sometimes a whole lot. Take them from kind of the blight on the block to the nicest house on the block if we can, and then find just phenomenal residents for them that don't need a lot of management, that don't need a lot of hand-holding, and that's helped us scale really fast. So we're able to hire out. We had 4 or 5 job sites going for a good chunk of last year concurrently, in addition to running our family and our day jobs and all that stuff. It's not easy.
No.
Going to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and, you know, waking up at 5 to do it all over again. And it's not super sustainable, but it doesn't have to be. In the last really 3 years, we've kind of gotten to a position where, you know, if we kind of lost our jobs again or whatever, we'd be okay. We could live off of our rental portfolio if we had to at this point. So, you know, some people say that's financial independence, or I don't know, like, you know, I don't know what that freedom number is or whatever, but, we're very grateful for what we've been able to achieve. And, you know, it's just a fun business. So,
yeah, I think it's really important to remember that it is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we own, that's all ours. So particularly as someone who's in residency at that level of my training, you know, I have a medical license, I'm a physician, I see my patients, but I'm in a learning environment. And so every time I see a patient, I have to go talk to a more senior physician and tell them what my plan is and what I hope to do, which is great. You know, I want the patients to have that layer of protection. But when you do that all day, it starts to feel like, I would just like to make a decision myself and not have to kind of check, you know, with someone else. Obviously, I understand why we do that in medicine, to make sure that, you know, we're learning and not making mistakes. But with real estate, it's all ours. And so, yeah, we're up late and, you know, and up early and working really hard and, you know, lots of emails, lots of phone calls, lots of decisions, lots of problems. But there are problems, and I think that's what makes it really fun. And we know that we're building something that we'll have forever, and that hopefully, you know, our children will have. Hopefully this is generational wealth and generational change. And so that makes it very manageable. 2018 was very hard. I won't lie. I don't hope to have another 2018 for a long time. We did, I think, eight total rehabs.
Really, really deep.
Came into Rochester. Was that your idea?
I think we both get each other going on things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What about another one? Like, and another one.
It was a lot.
And another one.
I think we did like about $500,000 in total between the purchase price and the rehab, you know, all of that. It was a lot. And then in 2019, or actually in December of 2018, when we rebranded, we got our logo, got our website up, really became a business as opposed to just two people, you know, owning a couple of houses. That's when we really stopped and said, okay, 2018 was awesome, and we have a whole lot more than we did on January 1st, but we also want to make sure we're protecting our family and our time together. And so, for example, we don't do any real estate on Wednesdays ever.
Cool.
We have at least one Sabbath.
Shut her down.
For real estate.
Good.
And if we can't take a day off of our business, you know, each week, like,
then we're doing something wrong.
We're doing something wrong. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And, you know, we travel a fair amount. We're about to travel
a lot.
Yeah. We're going to go on how many trips this summer?
I think like five.
Yeah. We're going to, Tony Robbins,
fun.
Unleash
the
Power.
So you're using it as personal growth as well. I mean, that I like that when you use travel as, you know, personal growth as well.
We're not big sit on the beach with a cocktail kind of people. we're actually renting different camper trailers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we've hiked most of the national parks that people go to anyway. And it's hard with the kids, to say the least, a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. We've got hiking packs for them, but it gets heavy really fast.
Yeah.
And, so we're going to try a camper. And if that goes well, I think we're going to buy a camper.
Mm-hmm.
So we can continue to get away from civilization. And, but I was just saying, yeah, I mean, we travel, and, you know, if our business can't keep going while we're not here, like, I think we're doing something wrong. And, just getting the right people in the right places. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. I think a lot of landlords treat their tenants like children. Well, first of all, we don't call them tenants. We call them residents.
Mm-hmm.
And, if it's not someone that we would be comfortable, like, getting into a marriage with, you know, it may not be a good fit for one of our properties. We tend to have properties that have a lot of maintenance. Like, we want like a big yard and a garage and, a home that someone who could purchase a home would want to rent, you know, and not someone who has to rent. And so they're able to manage things on their own very effectively,
mm-hmm,
you know? So
mm-hmm.
You got a sewer backup. Okay. I called the sewer cleanup guy that I have. And you take care of it from here. He's got your number. Like,
mm-hmm.
you don't need me anymore. So I don't need to be visiting my properties or checking on things. Everyone has a cell phone camera. You know, we don't use paper for anything. So it really helps to be location independent and just really pare down, you know, the work that has to be done to the minimum viable product and no more. So,
and I think we really go out of our way to build relationships with our tenants. Yeah. So we find out, well, why do you want this home? And, you know, maybe we learn that they're having a new baby or they have a pet or something like that. And we certainly don't, you know, encroach on them or anything like that, but we build relationships with them. We treat them very well and they tend to stay with us. So that home that we, our first property that we bought and rehabbed in Oklahoma City, our tenant lived in there for 4 years. And so she just moved out in January of this year. And it was just like, wow, like she's been living there since January of 2015. And she basically moved out because her children were done with school and she didn't want to have a 3-bed home anymore.
She actually put in a pool. Like, yeah. I mean, so, and that's not an unusual story for us. It's a different business model,
neat.
But it's one that we really like. So
is there a component of your business that you're looking to get others involved with it? As far as the investment side, the ownership side, is there any component to that of your business?
Yeah. So, if you go to our website, you can see kind of the different opportunities there. We work with lots of partners on different ventures. So, you know, when we purchased these homes with cash, actually right before I came here, I was on the phone with an agent trying to explain to them, because we've got several closes coming up and stuff, and they're like, well, you're gonna run out of cash, like you can't just buy homes like that. And I'm like, well, actually, if we can't, like if we don't have this much money in the bank, like our business really relies upon this. So we rely on our investing partners for that, and we offer a fixed rate of return that is 5 times what you'd probably get from other comparable fixed income assets like a bond or a CD or something like that. We beat rates you'll get from even variable return rates like the stock market. Instead of giving a low interest loan to Coca-Cola, you get to come walk through the property that you are helping to revitalize. And our investors love it. We send them videos of, you know, here's the house with the siding falling off and the broken windows. And, they invest $100,000 in this property or whatever, and they get to see their money make a real difference. So that's one way people can get involved.
I just want to say we had a lot of relationships with people who were, you know, fairly high earners, but they were also very busy and they didn't want to do the landlording and the rehab and all of that stuff that we find so enjoyable. You know, they had different interests or demands on their time. And so, you know, when we were growing in 2018, we were thinking, how can we make this work? We have people that would like to invest their money, but don't necessarily have the time. And we have a lot of time and expertise and we're running out of money. And so that's when we started working with our passive debt partners. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really good experience, I think, for everyone. We've returned all of the capital that we've promised.
Always a good start.
That's awesome.
It's been really fun, and I think for me, as a physician and as a psychiatrist, I know so much about physician suicide, and it's hard to believe that, I think a lot of people think of physicians as sort of living a charmed or a privileged life, but there's actually a lot of hardship, and a lot of that comes from the financial demands of having student loans and postponing earning until very late in life, and being so pressed for time, and so I know that if we can partner with people, most of our partners are physicians, but certainly not all. If we can partner with people and help them with their financial picture, well, that might give them the freedom to cut back a little bit on work or to say, I don't really want that job because it's too demanding, or I don't get treated fairly there. I want to go to this other job. And I just wonder if maybe we're moving the needle ever so slightly on physician wellness and physician suicide. I don't think it's, the be all end all, but I think when we can give people big returns on their money in a passive way, then they can use that to advance their financial goals. Well, then it's a win-win. The neighborhoods benefit, the residents that live in the home benefit, our investors benefit, and we benefit. And it's been really wonderful. We're actually having 2 investor phone calls tomorrow just to catch up and talk to them about our new projects, see, how they want to grow, what their goals are. And so that's been really fun. And again, it goes back to that being relationship based.
Amen.
So, you know, we could work with a hard money lender or something and have it be very transactionally based, and we would get what we need, but instead we work individually with investors, and we know their names and their children's names, and they know us and what we're doing, and they have our cell phones. And that's been so fun, having those relationships.
Absolutely. We actually pay the investors more than we pay the hard money lender, but
it's
totally worth it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we don't like you have to have a relationship with us if you're going to invest. It's just how it works, and it makes it so easy. So, we're working on a project and we're like, oh, well, it turns out this rehab's going to be way bigger than we expected, or hey, this new project came up. Do you want to roll your investment into this new project over here? And having that agility to work with private partners, a hard money lender, of course, is going to say, oh yeah, 5% we'll roll into this new investment or something like that. It doesn't make sense. And we really want to scale up. Like right now we're scaling out, really building our single family portfolio, really quickly. We doubled our portfolio, more than doubled our portfolio last year. We're hoping to acquire 20 single-family homes this year. We've got three, so we're behind schedule, but it's been slow.
It's been snowing.
And we've analyzed. So I went to an apartment complex investing conference last year, and I'm looking at every commercial opportunity in our market that I can get my hands on. But I really don't feel comfortable placing investor capital unless it's an amazing opportunity where we know that we can bring value, that's going to create a margin of safety for our investors, where it's going to create value for the community. We don't want to just place capital to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's a low cap rate environment in the commercial side. I talk to commercial brokers and they're like, well, it's not exactly a cash flow play. And they use other creative euphemisms like that. Well, if you put 50% down, you'd only have to feed it $1,000 a month. Yeah. So, just looking for opportunities for ourselves, our investors. Mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping we'd have a small to medium-sized apartment complex in our portfolio by now, but I think everyone does. It seems like there's a lot of competition for those deals and people are willing to pay too much. And we're also looking at scaling out. We have a turnkey offering, so people who really want to own the asset, we can basically put together one of our properties as a turnkey investment. Or if you want to learn how to do the whole thing yourself, we have a coaching program as well. And we have stuff on our website about all those different opportunities. So
Nick became a licensed agent in late 2017, and that really opened a lot of these opportunities, like being able to purchase these homes ourselves and be able to see everything that's on the market and get into the property very quickly. But then also to help other people grow their own portfolio as well.
Absolutely. It's interesting. In Oklahoma, it's more of a hustle-based economy. I can't think of like a significant number of properties transact through private party. And I just talked to an individual yesterday about purchasing a property. And I got off the phone and I'm like, he doesn't own that property. I'm not 100% sure if it's okay for them to be transacting without a license. And I think it might be the Minnesotan way to, report that to someone or something. I don't know who I'd report it to. I don't even know that anything untoward occurred. But the Oklahoman in me is like, hey, there's a house to buy. That's what I'm here to do, is to provide value to the seller and provide value to our investors. So getting the license was definitely a game changer for the Minnesota real estate culture. Everyone likes to see that you're licensed. So
yeah, that's cool.
So on the coaching side of things, because you guys said you did coaching, is that like an online training program that people just go through, or do they deal with you and like you actually coach them?
So last year, we've got kind of a menu, a buffet there on the website. So last year we helped a physician couple, put together, they purchased a distressed home, did a full renovation, and then leased it out and kind of put together the type of asset that we create. And we were there walking the job site, occasionally swinging a hammer when it looked like the contractor maybe wasn't swinging it with the right end of the hammer. And just kind of having these kinds of meetings, you know, every step of the way to make sure that they would be able to continue to do that on their own when, you know, when we weren't in the picture anymore. Mm-hmm. So everything from just, you know, simple deal analysis. That's the most common question people will approach us with is, hey, I've got this thing. Is this a deal? Mm-hmm. And
doing all the math.
Yep.
The cash on cash return, the
yep.
IRR, you know, someone says you can get those rents. Well, can you really? Mm-hmm. Or someone says mm-hmm. this is the rehab. Well, is that really?
Right.
And we can do that with pretty much any market in the country. So that doesn't have to be just our local market. So we can do that with like Zoom or Skype or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can also just work with people, you know, to teach them kind of this is what we do. This is how we're successful. These are the pitfalls that we've had. I think, you know, I kind of liken it to in medicine, you spend a couple of years in the books and then you spend a lot of years working under someone else. So just like I was saying, you know, I see a patient and then I go talk to someone more senior than me and say, this is what I want to do. Well, that second step is what we offer. So there's a lot of information out there on blogs and podcasts and books, but then actually getting out there and doing it. Our first property that we did, we were mentored by a real estate investor and a realtor in Oklahoma City, and that really allowed us to have the courage to do it. And so we do that with people that have read a lot and have listened to a lot of podcasts and want to buy something but are afraid, and understandably so. These are big decisions.
Yeah.
And so we can meet with them in person or, you know, with Zoom or something like that and kind of walk them through helping to decide if it's a good decision and to move forward with it. So that's been a lot of fun too, knowing that, yes, it's been hard. Yes, the last 3, 4, 5 years have probably been the hardest years of our lives, but we've laid a foundation now where we're pretty much financially independent, and to know that we could help someone else do that, that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm,
that's life changing. Mm-hmm. To someone can, you know, I dream now of maybe I'll stay home and homeschool my kids. That's a life changing decision, that how my children will be schooled and how I'll spend my time. We could not have done that if it wasn't for real estate. And if we could help someone else get to be able to make those decisions for themselves, whatever it is, changing jobs, staying home, retiring early, moving overseas, whatever, that's super cool. That makes it all worth it.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. Like, what we do is not rocket science, you know. Purchase a home that needs some love, fix it up, and rent it out. That's all there is to it. There's a lot. We've figured out through coaching that there's a lot of little things that we've kind of learned and forgot that we learned that make all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And I think we even forget how much help we had as well.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I failed to mention, so I had an IT consultancy in Oklahoma City, and so I did consulting for CPAs and attorneys and stuff like that. And I noticed that they all had rental properties. And one day I was helping this attorney with his computer, and he's like, yeah, my email isn't working, and I'm trying to figure out why his email isn't working. And I see some email about he's buying like 100 golf carts. And I'm like, why are you buying 100 golf carts? And he's like, oh, it's just for a country club or something. And I'm like, okay, you're going to have to walk me through that. What's going on? And he's like, oh, you know, that country club over there. Yeah, we're buying that. Like, just the humility. Like, he's almost embarrassed to say it, you know. And I don't know what that level of success is when you're not a member at the country club. You bought the country club. And I'm like, I need to do whatever this fella is doing.
And that speaks to, you know, you say you identify as an Oklahoman. I think coming of age, you know, we really lived our early adulthood, both of us in Oklahoma, and people are so humble there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you know, maybe I'm buying a country club, but don't think anything differently of me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad we had that experience. Maybe we would have in other parts of the country too, but I really think that shaped who we are as individuals and as business people.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. Absolutely. And we try really hard to practice that same humility. I just don't think there's very much special about what we're doing. We just have tried really hard to hustle and do something that we're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's working okay. So.
That's exciting. Yeah. Well, we made it. We are all the way to 1 hour.
Wow.
Right. Believe that?
All right.
Rock and roll. That was great.
Awesome.
That was awesome. I learned a lot. Did you learn a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the listeners will learn a lot too. So if people want to learn more about Black Swan Real Estate, where can they go? How do they find you? How do they ask you questions?
Sure. I'm Nick at blackswan.realestate. Or you can call my cell phone, 507-369-4982.
So, you know, as we mentioned, our website's just blackswan.realestate, .com at the end. My email's Elaine at blackswan.realestate. I'm not going to give up my cell phone because I spend my day seeing patients. So I'm going to stick with that. Reach Nick if you need us. But we do a lot by email. We'd love to hear from people. If you go to our website from there, you'll be able to find our Facebook and our Instagram. That's where a lot of our fun updates go to. We started posting our walkthroughs and before and after pictures and all that fun stuff. So those are ways to get in touch with us.
Yeah, we've got all our videos on Facebook. So if you Google Black Swan Real Estate, you'll see our Facebook page there. And people, so I was going to buy a house the other night. It was like 9 o'clock at night and this lead came our way and I went and took a look at it. And I was walking through and I'm like, oh yeah, I like this house. And she's like, well, what are you going to do with it? And I'm like, oh, I think we'll, you know, do some flooring and some paint. And she's like, oh, is it going to be like this house? And she, like, you know, mentioned one of the houses we're doing. And I'm like, yeah, you know, we'd probably do the exact same thing. She's like, oh yeah, I've seen all your videos. And
that's awesome.
I want to know what you'd do with our house. Would you make it look like that? And so it's interesting when your content precedes you.
Yeah.
People really like those videos.
We'll end with this funny story. So before we did all of this, we had a YouTube channel where we did similar things with cars. We would buy distressed cars and fix them up and sell them.
Started with the oil truck. You were like, I'm on to something.
Exactly. We're like, wow. You know, this is
easy.
Basically real estate, just take off a lot of zeros.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun. And we were driving home from Minnesota to Oklahoma City. This was after we had come up to look at the house that we already had purchased, but I figured we should probably go look at it before we move in. So we came up to meet the owners and to just make sure that what we had bought was a real house that we could move our family into. And when we were driving back, our truck broke down. It had a catastrophic transmission failure, and we were about halfway. So we were like, wow.
It's a long halfway.
Do we go back to Oklahoma City? Or do we keep going to Oklahoma City? Or do we go back to Rochester? Neither of these are good options. Called every tow truck company we could in Oklahoma City. They all laughed at us. We're not driving 500 miles away. You're crazy. One of them,
just abandon our truck? Like, what are we?
That's what we were considering.
Yeah.
Like, do we just leave a note on it? Like, please take
sorry.
It to impound. Please recycle it. You know, I don't know. Like, do we get like an Uber home? I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And we've got our kid in the child safety seat.
Yeah,
and,
we had a 9-month-old at the time. So we finally, at like midnight, finally got on the phone with a tow truck driver, and something in that conversation, he said, "You guys are the people with the YouTube channel. You guys are
no
the people."
Way.
No, I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up.
It's like, I recognize your voice.
Yeah, he's like,
no way.
He's like, you guys do the cars, right? And we were like, yes, please come help us. Please come get us. Doesn't speak much about our car business that we were stranded on the side of the road. That was our own personal vehicle. But he came and he got us. And I had told him as we were hanging up, I said, listen, my cell phone's about to die. I don't think I'm going to be able to charge it. I guarantee you that we are here waiting for you. Please come get us.
Yeah.
And he showed up at like 3-4 in the morning or something like that. And at that point, my cell phone was dead. And he said, I was thinking about turning around because you weren't answering your phone, but I knew that you had told me that you wouldn't answer your phone. And more importantly,
gosh,
I knew that you were the YouTube people.
Oh,
and so I came and I
gosh.
Got you. And, you know, to go back to relationships, like, we might have had to have walked home.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So
wow,
that's
a good
our,
and what
really
can
cool.
we do a shout out to that guy right there? Like, is there a company? Like, he needs one more tow job in OKC.
I do not remember.
Darn it, we'll
I
figure
left,
it out.
I left amazing
out.
Reviews
oh,
for
yeah.
him on all
yeah.
of the on all of the sites. I mean, he really saved us that
that's
day.
Amazing.
It was like a $2,000 tow or something crazy, but he earned
yeah.
it. And so that's been fun kind of experiencing that again.
Yes.
Where, you know, where people are like, well, what are you going to do to our house?
Mm-hmm.
So
exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting
yep.
times.
Kind of a funny story there.
No, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Well, thank you so much for joining. You can check out the Office of China Hall podcast on Spotify, on iTunes. I am Bucky, one of the co-founders of the China Hall.
I'm Josh. You can find me on social media under MediaCorp or online MediaCoreMarketing.com.
And we're looking for more and more fun conversations like this one. So keep them coming. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Done.
Bada bang.
All right. I think that was one of our best. That was sweet.
I love that.
Yeah.
We get a little evangelical now and again.
Yeah.